You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and I was just thinking before I hit record here about this movie back in 2003. You may remember it. It was directed by a woman named Sofia Coppola. It was called Lost in Translation, and it is about two individuals from the U.S. who found themselves in Japan and really didn't connect or jive with the social community that surrounded them, but they found each other. And this is really relevant to the conversation that we're about to dive into here. My guest today is Wendy Pease, who works in the translation and in the interpretation world. Probably I used the wrong word. It might have been interpreting. Helping businesses jump across borders and really fit into other societies in a way that most of us don't really take the time to think about in advance of jumping across those borders. So, Wendy, welcome to More Perfect Marketing.
Thank you. It is great to be here with you, David. And I'm so glad you mentioned that movie because I either didn't see it or I saw it so long ago, I can't remember it, which is hysterical because I try to watch every movie about translation that I can. So thanks for bringing that up.
I have to remember it was Bill Murray and he was like a spokesman for a Japanese whiskey brand.
That's
what the movie was. So yeah, but I thought about it as soon as I saw that you were on the calendar for today. I thought, well, that really brings up memories about how it's not just language, and we'll talk a little bit about language, but it's also culture and understanding how, as a business or a service provider or a product creator, how we fit into another culture as well.
Oh, absolutely. There is so much culture and language that it's just rich. I mean, you've heard it said that Eskimos have about 12 different words for snow because of all the different kinds of snow that they live in. In Peru, they have multiple different kinds of words for potatoes because there's that many different kinds of potatoes. And it's the same with corn in different places. So, you know, just right there, the number of words, or in countries that you don't have certain words because you just don't have that experience. There's some countries that don't have the past tense. So they always live in the now or the future tense. And ironically, they have higher levels of saving.
Yeah. That's an interesting correlation. I wonder why, but we're not going to have time to dive into that right now. So I want to step back for a moment and talk a little bit about the work that you do, because translating from one language to another is used in so many different ways in business. Yes. And, you know, I know that right now we have access to all kinds of tools out there, technology that can help us translate very easily, but not necessarily accurately, particularly when it comes to the nuances of marketing, for example. Can you sort of dive into the subject a little bit for us?
Sure. When you're machines are really good at matching and maybe kind of guessing a little bit, but they don't get the hidden innuendos between messages between languages. So, for example, we did a translation for Staples and they had a tagline, "Make more happen." And they took the "more" out and they dropped words in. And it's a very catchy slogan in English because you can bookend those words and you can make work happen, make play happen, make refrigerator art happen. Now, the French translator saw that and she said, yeah, all these work, you know, they couldn't even, the other languages couldn't bookend, but they could get the sentiment across. But the French translator saw the refrigerator art and she's like, yeah, that's not a thing. You know, in France, things have one purpose. The refrigerator is for keeping food cold. So they don't hang their kids' artwork and celebrate it on the refrigerator like Americans do. So, you know, the translator, the human translator knew to come back and ask and tell us about that. So we could go to the client and say, do you want us to come up with something else or just skip that campaign? Or how do you want to handle this? So that's a really prime example on how words don't always translate into another culture.
So a lot of businesses, and you gave an example of, you know, a large corporate entity that's getting into another market, but, mm-hmm. you know, businesses of all sizes are able to expand across borders, especially these days. We've now, as, you know, worldwide discovered how we can expand across borders simply, you know, through Zoom. And so how do you sort of think we're going to be moving forward with the types of businesses that are looking to expand? It's going to be a lot easier some respects, and also a lot more challenging when it comes to the type of things that you specialize in. What are you projecting we're going to be dealing with along these lines in the coming years?
Well, there was so much there. You've really done your homework to unpack. So let me start with industries. It doesn't matter if you have products or services or what kind of industry you're in, you have the opportunity to go global. The number one export in the United States is services. So that's something to keep in mind. The second thing is the size of company. You used to have to be a large company to go because you needed the investment to develop your strategy and then implement it and put your feet on the ground to actually be able to sell internationally. Now with the internet, small companies are getting into that. And so less than 1% of U.S. companies export, and 98% of that are small and mid-sized businesses. So even if you're a small company that does business-to-business services, you have a tremendous opportunity to do international work. Now, even if you decide not to cross the border, look at the community that you're serving. Like I see in the town next to us in Marlboro, Massachusetts, there's a huge Brazilian population there. And the restaurants and the stores and the people there who just put signs up there that say, welcome, or we speak Portuguese in their window, get a lot more people coming in. So if you're an insurance agent or an accountant or any of the professional services, don't forget to target these people who are still going to need these services in the United States. So now people who export and market across languages actually have stronger companies. They have higher revenues, higher profits, higher valuations. They protect their home markets better. They pay higher salaries. So across all the metrics, they're doing better. And it's only on a small investment for translation. And rather than looking at translation as a cost, it's better to look at it as a return on your investment because the payoff is huge. So did I cover all
made? I realize that I often ask nested questions like that, and thanks for pointing that out. But you brought up something at the end about which I didn't ask, but I wanted to move to, which is about the types of services that you provide, and not only the type of investment that is necessary for the business to consider, but also the importance of what you do. And you gave a great example earlier when you talked about Staples, but where does a service like yours come into play for businesses? Because it's well beyond the Staples example that you gave.
Oh, absolutely. And so many years ago, I would go to a networking meeting and people would ask me, well, who needs translation services? And so I'd have to explain written translation, spoken interpretation, the differences in who would need it. 10 years ago, when Google Translate came out, you know, we all kind of raised an eyebrow and said, is this going to put us out of business? Now I say there's no way but Google is going to put us out of business or any of the machine translation because it doesn't have the capability of capturing the nuances between languages. So I tell people if it's something that can affect your bottom line, so it's something that's important, you need to have a human translator on that. If you get an email in and you don't know what it says, fine, pop it into Google Translate and see what it is. If you're going on vacation, you're trying to get somewhere, use Google Translate. It's fantastic. It's opened up the world to more of a demand for translation services. So I only see that growing and growing. So if you're doing marketing translation, if you're doing legal contracts, if you're doing agreements, if you're doing brochures, anything that you want to look good that you spend the time to do, then you want to have a human translator do it.
So, and that was a pretty long list of things that you just gave examples of. In terms of a business that is, you know, thinking about expanding into either another country or as you gave an example a few minutes ago, just down the road to connect with a different community that speaks a different language, what are the steps that somebody needs to really take in terms of like starting the process of working with translators?
You know better than anyone, it always starts with strategy. So if you don't have a strategy, talk to David first. And then, you know, so, and we recommend this. I just wrote a book called The Language of Global Marketing, and it's Translate Your Domestic Strategies into International Sales and Profits. And in the book, I lay out how you want to go about thinking about it. And the first thing we do when a client calls into us, and we say, what's your strategy? Or, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? So we want to understand what the business goals are. Then we look at the marketing goals if it's a marketing translation, and then we can transition that into your multilingual marketing goals. So if you don't understand what the strategy is, you can't move off the starting block. You know, and part of that strategy is what country, what language, who's the buyer persona, where are you coming in? Once you understand that strategy, you can look at the technology that's out there. Like, can you use Google Translate, or do you need a high quality, or do you need something in the middle, or can it be done in English? And then if it's your website, what's the website built in, and are there APIs? Is it manual? Are you going to do the whole website? Are you going to do a microsite? Are you going to do a landing page? And then you can get into the process. So you have strategy, technology, process. And the process is, how are we going to get the copy from one language to the next language, and what are all the review processes and the steps in between? And that will give you, by looking at all those things, give you the quality that you need.
You got detailed in areas of marketing that I imagine not all translation service providers are as well schooled in as you.
So, oh, absolutely not. Yeah. It's one of our deep, deep specialties.
And so I imagine that one of the things that a business owner or a marketing professional who's charged with finding a service like yours needs to figure out is, all right, is this the right kind of service for us? And how do they go about vetting potential service providers?
Oh, excellent. Excellent question. Because a lot of times people feel like they can't judge the quality of translation. So they might shop on price. I'm seeing that less and less as people are understanding how important the quality is, or they've gotten burned. But, you know, 17 years ago when I bought the business, there wasn't as much differentiation in the market with service delivery. Now we're really seeing it. We've got some companies that specialize in machine translation. They may service large law firms with large legal cases, with large files of documents that need to be translated to get to that one file that has the relevant information on the case. So you pop that through machine translation, you can review it to get to what you want, and then just have that one file translated by a human. You've got other ones that decide to do machine translation with human post-editing. So it's going to sound awkward and stilted. It's really not good for marketing. And I've had people call us up and want to work with us. And they ask us, do you do machine translation with post-human editing? And we're like, absolutely not. So you get that. And then you get people like us. And there's other variations in the middle of it, but to give you the, you know, the big screen of it. Then there's people like us that do high quality, and then we specialize out by industry. And so we have a deep, deep specialty in anything that could really give you liability or risk your revenues. And one of those is marketing, you know.
Okay, so I want to find out what some of the others are. I imagine that there are industries where there's all kinds of, you know, things you have to be careful about the way that you say. So beyond marketing, what are some of those that you're specializing in?
Yeah, so we also specialize in life sciences and medical, we call it. And so that's everything from patent research, patent filings, regulatory clinical trial authorization forms, going through commercialization, patient information, and then actually providing interpreters on the ground at doctors' offices and in hospitals. So medical is another one of our deep specialties that we really understand. And legal happens to be another one. We don't do the massive amounts of machine translation to get it down, but we would do that, you know, if they know what file they need translated, if they came to us, we'd be able to get the legalese. And it's real important because laws between the countries are different. And so it's not only language, but it's understanding that difference in law. And then little things like if you write a contract in English and you're putting it in another language, you know, to always add something in, if there's a question between the translation, the English language will prevail. So
it makes total sense. And the fact that there's the specificity of specializing in liability issues, right? A business that has a set of criteria about the way that they function in the first language that they're in, right? They need to, I guess, consider prioritizing those in entering into another language. And so finding a provider like you guys who specialize in those areas is critical for them to sort of consider or keep at the top of the list as they're vetting options out there.
Yes, we carry a Lloyd's of London liability insurance policy for that reason, because wow, we're working with extremely sensitive materials. And I've owned the company 17 years. We've been around for over 30 years and we've never had a claim against it. So we're very, very careful about who we put on assignments and then keep them there to keep having that knowledge build up on that client.
So where do you pull your team in from? Are they people that you're training in these areas? Are you looking for people who have expertise and happen to speak multiple languages? How do you sort of find your support team to help all of your clients?
Yeah, that's part of the magic, because it's not just knowing people who are bilingual, it's also having the specialty, also knowing that they've had training or experience in translation. So if they read something and they don't understand it, they know to ask. If it's not culturally appropriate, they know how to communicate that. They have to meet deadlines, be good at communicating. If they're doing American insurance or healthcare stuff, they have to be based in the United States and, you know, learn a language in another country so they can understand the U.S. medical system and the stuff that would go on there. So how we find them is that I bought the company 17 years ago, and she had a full stable of people that she was already, the prior owner was already working with. We've kept them. So we've got relationships with interpreters for years. If we need to bring somebody in new, we just have the old person read their material as an editor. We don't charge, you know, a client for that. You know, it's part of our screening process just to make sure that it's good. And then we pull that person into the fold and develop a long-term relationship with them. So there you can see translators and interpreters all over the internet. You could go to some of those, you know, paperwork places and find people. But we go through a strict recruiting process and testing process before we'd put anybody on a job. So just hiring somebody blind would make me kind of nervous.
Yeah. And it makes sense. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of us have these options available to us these days of going and finding a freelancer who can fulfill a gig, right? But if you want the institutional knowledge that you provide, that's there's so much more value in the structure that you offer. Right. I want to shift gears for a moment, because one of the things that you shared with me before we started recording was about how the U.S. government helps businesses in various respects get access to larger audiences, broader audiences outside of the country, maybe also inside of the country. Can you walk us through a little bit of what you were sharing with me?
Sure. I mean, this is one of the best kept secrets, no matter what state you're in. The U.S. government has free consulting and supports for you to export. They even have grants for you to get money to do your translation. And so the reason they do this is our balance of trade is so far off. We bring in goods from all over the world. Container ships come in here full and they leave empty. And so, you know, I just hear all these people going, oh, China's going to beat us. China's going to beat us. I'm like, all you need to do is sell your goods into China, because it's a huge market with a lot of disposable income now. So, you know, just sell back there. And so the U.S. government, the federal government, gives states grants and support. So they have federal and state people who are here to consult with you. They can help you do some of the, you know, the strategy work. Once you've done your marketing strategy with you, David, then they can go over to the state and say, I'm interested in entering these countries, or do you have connections that could introduce me to a distributor there? So they've got, you know, Gold Key program that you can go over there, and then you can apply for your grant to do translation. And we're willing to help people with that. And we have all the contact information for each state on our website. So if you just go to Rapport Translations, Rapport is R-A-P-P-O-R-T, translations.com, and look for the little search glass up on the top right-hand side. What's that? The search icon, I guess you'd call it. We all know what it is. Look for search. Yep. And then type in STEP grants, S-T-E-P. And if you go in there, you can look down the list and see where your state is. And we have an email, a phone number, and a contact name for the people at the states that you can reach out to. But of course, reach out to me and I'll talk you through it.
That's awesome. I'm looking at that on your website right now. And we'll make sure that people have both the link in the show notes, but also we'll give them a link where they can find out a ton about you. Not only your website for Rapport International, but also where they can find your book, which I'm going to be picking up a copy of, and a few other things. So where to find your podcast, that's another thing we want to make sure people can find as well. So that's pretty amazing that these services and grants are available from the government. But it makes total sense what you just, the reason that you've described, this imbalance that we have. I was thinking, as you were mentioning, you know, China is really taking over a lot of the production of the world, and the fear that we have of this famous story, and you may know the story as well, of a major fail of a U.S. brand in China. And there's probably been many of these, but I remember, I don't know how long ago this was, maybe back in the 80s, when Oreo was introduced in China. Do you know the story?
No, this is a good one. I love it.
So Oreo had this major fail where they invested a huge amount of money to roll out the brand and the cookies across China, right? China is a market that I think a lot of companies have coveted for a long time, because there's a growing wealth across the population there.
Right.
But the problem was, the cookies had two problems. One, flavor-wise, it really wasn't conducive with the palate in China. Second,
too sweet, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was partially the flavor. And then the second one is that it was too sweet. Conversely, okay. Oreo introduced itself in India and it wasn't sweet enough. Right. So understanding, right, it's not language, but understanding the palate, yeah, the cultural expectations about a product that you're introducing into the market. you know, you have to really be dialed in. And so,
Yes. Oh, I love that about Oreo. Is that happens all the time. I mean, Pepperidge Farm had, they couldn't figure out why Latinos weren't buying their cookies. Mm-hmm. And they had a huge Latino population working there. And they said, well, you don't make strawberry. That's a very common flavor, popular with Latinos. Yeah. Made it, flew off the shelf. So if you notice, Pepperidge Farm has strawberry flavor now.
I hadn't noticed. I moved away from the East Coast, and so I don't hear those Pepperidge Farm commercials anymore.
Right. Yeah. So there's little set, and it goes back to knowing your buyer and doing your consumer research, which is all part of the strategy, right?
Absolutely. So listen, we have gotten to the end of our session today, and I really want to thank you for all these amazing insights and the cool share from the government about grants and access to consulting and all of that. People should reach out and learn more about you, both your business, your podcast, your book, and they can do that all at one place. Do you want to tell them where they can find you?
Yes. If you go to wendypease.com, that's my personal website, and it links to our company where we provide translation. It offers a free couple chapters of the book. It links to Amazon where you can get the book. You can also get it at Barnes & Noble and all the other places where you buy books. And it also links to the podcast where we have guests coming on all the time with experience in global marketing, talking about mistakes and best moves and funny stories and travel experiences. And it's I love it. I mean, I'm having a ball talking to the people. So yes, that would be a good place to go to find
Excellent.
Me.
And just in case you're not looking at the way that Wendy spells her last name, it's P-E-A-S-E. So it's not peace. And it's not peas like the little green food. It's peas. So it's WendyPease.com. So go ahead and check that out. Wendy Pease, thank you so much for spending some time. This has been a real fun conversation.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a joy. You asked some really, really good questions.
Well, thanks. And thank you for hanging out with us on another episode of More Perfect Marketing. We'll see you back here soon.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. For a collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, please visit getdavidsgift.com. That's getdavidsgift.com. Once again, thanks for listening to More Perfect Marketing.